Hello everybody, how you doing today? It's a new day, it's a fresh day. I hope you're up shaking and baking. You know, there's some people that just come into your life and they first come as a client. Like some people say, I came for the business but I stayed for the community.
Absolutely.
And I'm really talking to my friend. I love her so much, you know. And Abiola, I don't know how to introduce you again.
I can introduce myself coach
and I love her line of business. She's a family business advisor. You're gonna find this conversation really interesting. This conversation is interesting because it's also prophetic for you. Listen to me, because you're going to make a lot of money, so you will need someone to manage your family wealth. Abiola, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Thank you so much, Paul. Awesome to be here with you doing this again. I mean, you've been an amazing person. You're my coach, you know. You're still my coach. Amazing. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So, I got really interested in what you were talking about. We had a conversation like 2 years ago, a year ago in Lagos. You were talking about family wealth. But before we go into that, what is the difference between riches and wealth? Because I think people confuse that. And I love what you were defining before the show, and I really loved it.
Fantastic. You see, the way I would describe the two of them is just to, you know, put them side by side and just oppose it with a few examples. You know, there's a sense in which people feel like, you know, when you come into money, right, there's that level of clout and noise and everything around you. So you're wearing designers, you're living in the best, you know, places in town, you're driving the best car, you know, and everything. And I describe that as, okay, maybe that's what rich people do, because there's just a whole lot of noise. And the reason they do that is when you leave the level of security, when you think about the Abraham's Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? When you leave the level of security, where you are then getting into is the level of social status, where you want to ascribe a certain level of, you know, social, whether it is growth or whatever, status, really, you're craving status. And so you tend to define yourself by the amount of money in your bank account, the kind of clothes you wear, the places you go, the places you travel to, you know, the car you drive. All these things are the things by which you're using to place yourself where you want to be seen socially. That is where a lot of rich people are. But when you talk about the wealthy have come to a level of self-actualization. And that is why when you engage a wealthy person, when you look at their physique and whatever they have on, nothing about them gives them away that they have a lot of wealth. Why? They are so self-assured. They don't have to tell you how much is in their bank account. They are so self-assured, you know, that their sense of identity is not defined by how much wealth they have. And they don't have to tell you, they don't have to show you who they are before they know that they are wealthy. You see? So I have interacted with people on different levels, and I can tell from my very first interaction with someone if this is just someone that is rich because they've just come into money. And they have to let everybody know that they've come into money by everything that they're doing, where they're spending their money, how they show up. And then the wealthy, that maybe the wealth is even generational, like you've always been in money. So there's no point trying to make a point that you have money. Do you see? Yeah. That's the difference. And the mindset is also very different. The way they make decisions is also different. Even financing decisions, do you see? How they buy investment, how they position for investment, where they deploy their funds, their capital, is also different because their mindset is different.
So, I mean, you've interacted with very rich people. You've also interacted with very, very wealthy people, and they are your clients. What is the mindset that you think, if you look at somebody, they're not rich right now? What mindset do they need to start installing in their head for you to say to them, you know, one day this person is going to become wealthy? What are those telltale signs?
I think the number one thing that I look out for, or that gives me a sense that this person may not be there yet, but they are going somewhere. And this is another candidate, a new money person that is going to be wealthy, or they are building their wealth. They don't have the need to prove a point at this point in time. That's the mindset. You don't have the need. You don't feel compelled to prove a point to anybody. You are so long-term in your thinking. And when I say long-term, you are thinking beyond your generation. You're thinking about, you know, the leverage you can create in your lifetime that generations after you can begin to benefit from.
That's right.
So your thinking is so different from the person who wants to live in the best of town just to show off and see that, you know, I have a lot of money. The way you will make it, you know, a decision. Let me use an example. Okay. There was some mentor of mine that I sat down with some time ago, very wealthy. That was when I was going to get my first property on the island in VI precisely. And I told him, you know, how much it was and that, you know, I needed to just make the money and everything. And he said to me, he said, is this your first property? I said, yes. He said, you know, you don't really have to live in your house, as in live in your first property. That you could actually do an investment property way ahead of when you eventually buy the house that you really feel like living in. Now, that's a different mindset. I could not understand it at that point in time. Because I just felt like your first property should be your house. Like, you know, and then he said to me, your house is not an asset. He said, you don't make money on top of your house. If anything, you are spending more money to maintain it.
That's a tough one to swallow, you know.
Very tough. So you see the mindset that I'm talking about, the way a wealthy man thinks is totally different from the way a supposedly rich person, someone that has just come into money, would think. Because the first thing you want to think is, hey, I've made this money. Let me just get to the best part of town. Let's spend the money. Let's show people that, you know, my level has changed. And typically for Nigerians, you know, how you know that your level has changed is that you move from the mainland to the island.
Or the car you drive.
You know, or the kind of wristwatches you wear. So you now wear gold just to show that, yes, I can afford it.
Yeah.
And then you now travel maybe two or three times a year with your family just to show that you can afford it. All those things. So the mindset of someone who is going to build wealth long term is delayed gratification. And the need, not having the need to prove a point to anybody to show that you have money. I think for me that is very fundamental. Every other thing is secondary.
So powerful. You know, this thing about proving a point to other people has caused a lot of problems for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
A lot of problems. A lot of, we don't even want to go there now. A lot of problems. So for your own personal experience, what triggered this journey for you? Why did you start to take wealth creation and wealth education seriously? What was the trigger for you? For me, for example, I'm taking wealth creation and being wealthy seriously because I didn't come from money. I love my mother, but she was never rich. She was very religious, very spiritual. I love her to pieces. She was never rich, and I saw her struggle financially, and I don't want to have that kind of experience with my children. And I said to myself, I can have the spiritual and the money all at the same time. You can have it all.
Absolutely, yes.
So what were the trigger moments for you? Because I know when my mother would come back, there was no enough food or the food quality was not good. I felt it. Those were trigger moments for me. What was the trigger moment for you to go like, you know what, I'm taking this in very seriously, man?
You know, the very first, if I recall, I think the very first time I came into awareness and some sort of resolution around what I wanted my future to look like, I think I was 12 years. My parents were not poor, but they were not rich, right? So we were just average. You know, we got by, really. We didn't have the best of things, the best of toys. We didn't travel, but we were also not too poor that we would not be able to eat and all that. But when I was age 12, I began to ask myself questions in terms of, could there be more to life than what we see? And I was brought up in a way that was very conservative, weren't used to going to other people's homes. So it wasn't like I was seeing things that I coveted and I felt like having and all that. It wasn't that.
It was internal.
But I think it was more from a sense of really just asking myself if there could be more to what I saw with my parents. Mm. In fact, my definition of success at the time, or who I would consider a successful person as the time at that time, was my father's younger sister, who wow. was a pharmacist, and then her husband is a doctor.
Yeah.
And both of them lived in Lagos. They had their own practice. They had a four-story building. The wow. hospital was in the basement. The pharmacy was there. So I just saw them. I'm like, these people are made.
This is
like,
the life,
this is the life, you know, running your own practice and doing your own thing and making money and all that.
Yeah.
And whenever I came for holiday and I, you know, immersed myself in, you know, the things around me, I just used to ask myself questions. Could there be more?
Mm.
And interestingly, growing up, I wanted to be a medical doctor.
For real?
Because again, yes, that was my definition of success, that maybe if I became a medical doctor, maybe I would also be
one as well.
I mean, my own childish mind, that was what I thought. And I was great at school. I was a science student. Yeah. I was great. So there was no reason for me not to consider medical
yeah.
school. Honestly, I thank God that I did not, because events happened that sort of derailed, you know, that path, and I landed in something else where what I'm counting is money. Do you see? So I eventually went into management sciences. I studied project management in school, and then part of that process, I got to now start doing accounting, right? And then I said to myself, oh, accountants are going to be studying for 4 years and then they become accountants.
Mm.
So, and I'm going to be taking accounting courses for 3 years. I might as well also be an accountant.
Mm.
And then it was those days where we would have a lot of hassle strike, and I was very restless as a young person. I always wanted to immerse myself in something.
Yeah,
so I picked up ICAN. I started studying for ICAN.
Mm.
And I indeed became a chartered accountant before I left university, right? And that was not even my course of study. You know, so I loved finance. I just got interested in finance because I was quite analytical.
Mm.
I would think beyond the level that an average person would think. I would question things. I would probe things. I would ask questions. I would sit with people that knew more than me. So finance became my next best thing, you know, that I immersed myself in. And I didn't want to do finance just on the face level, because a lot of people that read banking and finance in school those days wanted to work in the bank.
Yes.
And so what you would do when you go to the bank is you're just running around mobilizing deposits.
Yes.
I told people then, as at that time when it was very trendy to work in the bank, I told
yeah.
people I said I didn't want to work in a bank.
Worry.
You know, and people looked at me like, are you serious?
Like, I'm looking at you like that.
Are you serious? You don't want to work in a bank? Like, that yeah. is the in. If you're not working in a bank, you're working in oil and gas.
Yes.
If it's not any of those things, what else are you looking at?
Yeah.
But I told them, I said, I didn't want to work in a bank because I knew that working in a bank that puts me in a place where all I'm doing is mobilizing deposits will make me redundant in my brain, in the way I think.
Mm.
I didn't think it would challenge me intellectually enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I made up my mind that I love finance. I will pursue finance, but I will not do banking. I will do more of corporate finance and go and understand how people create wealth,
yes.
how people create value with their companies. That was what I wanted to understand. So I eventually left school and I got into an investment bank. So I went into investment banking. That was my foray into core finance. So when I left investment banking, which I did for about a year or so, I now went into consulting proper, with focus on financial services, meaning that my clients were banks, asset management companies, insurance companies, and all that. Again, I wanted to be immersed in the financial services industry.
Hmm.
Why all this? I wanted to understand the science of creating wealth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you see? And wealth for me is not just so that I can have money to show that I have money. I think generationally. I often ask myself as a young girl that if my parents had, you know, if they created wealth and they were able to create some leverage for me, I felt like I would have turned out a lot better because I was really smart, even if I'm saying that myself. You know, I felt like if I found myself in an environment that really challenged me more intellectually, especially when I was in the university, I felt like I would have been more creative and I would have done so much more.
Yeah.
Right, than, you know, where my environment confined me to be. So in my head, all I was thinking about when I hear wealth, it was leverage.
That's right.
Leverage.
That's right.
What leverage can I create for my own unborn children, for the next generation, by mastering finance, mastering wealth creation, so that I can create leverage for the next generation? For me, that was my mindset. And that was really what got me into thinking about getting into understanding wealth and then bringing it down. Of course, my career then led me into family office, which now brought it from the corporate angle and led me into the family aspect of wealth, which is another industry on its own.
Entirely. Speaking about the family office, some people are hearing this for the first time. I heard it first from you. Really, I heard it first from you. So you want to tell us, lazy man, to use the, you know, Morgan Housel, the guy that wrote The Psychology of Money.
Brilliant, right.
Brilliant guy. Okay.
Brilliant guy.
Smart guy. So break it down for us in his nuts and bolts. What is a family office for young guys like us, women listening to this, running their own businesses? We are thinking, do we need a family? Do we start thinking along those lines? There's somebody who may be reading this, listening to this right now, who will listen to this episode of the Paul Fo podcast and says, you know what? I've been running a business for 20 years, 30 years. I'm in my 60s now. Or my dad is in his 70s, and I think my dad should talk to Abiola. What is a family office?
Fantastic. Yeah. A family office is a dedicated, I would say a firm, a platform, an office that really just focuses on helping you to create wealth in a very structured way, such that the wealth can grow and is preserved and protected, and then you can build a legacy that can be passed easily from one generation to the other. Now, let me go back a little bit and break that down. Somebody can ask me now and say, oh, what does that mean? I mean, I can, on my own, you know, decide how I want to build my wealth, what kind of things I want to invest in, and how I want to pass it on to the next generation. I would say for a fact that the reason, especially on the African continent, the reason we have not seen wealth actually being transferred from one generation to the other, and that wealth not being dissipated, but the wealth growing and is growing as one generation is passing and getting into another generation, is because people have approached wealth management from their own individual idealistic view without necessarily building a structure around that wealth that will ensure that the wealth is not just in your own lifetime, but that wealth can continue to grow whether or not you are here or you have gone. Do you see? That is what a family office does for you. You said an example of maybe somebody who is in their 60s, 70s, thinking of transitioning or retiring. They built a fantastic company. The business is, you know, quite a success.
And maybe, can we put an example? I was listening to Arise TV, and then I was listening to a doctor. There's a doctor on that thing. What's his name again? No. There are three of them, but one of the anchors of Arise TV was talking about, is it Punch newspaper now that celebrated 40 years?
Dr. Abati.
Dr. Abati was saying that there was a particular newspaper in Nigeria. They've celebrated 40 or 50 years in business. So he was celebrating them that the man has long gone, but his children are taking that from the to the. Because we used to always say that we don't have generational businesses in Nigeria. I think we do, but not enough. So
that's Guardian newspaper. Yes. Interestingly, you know, I have met the woman, right, the matriarch, and I'm in touch even with the children. I even anchored one of their events last year. I spoke at one of their events last year, and we've been having this conversation. Now, they are one example of, you know, a family that has built a business and has been able to successfully pass it on to the next generation. You know that there are many ways you can create wealth. One of the ways you can create wealth is when you build a business that in itself is a wealth machine.
Come on now.
Do you see? And then that can continue to generate wealth. And whether you are running the business or not, if you build the right structure around it, that business can continue to be a wealth machine, just, you know, spilling out money. There's a family that I know that their family made some investments, built some businesses, and the children are not working in any of the businesses. But the dividends that they get from all the businesses that their father built before he died is enough to take care of them for the next 10 generations. Do you understand? So think of yourself as a business person who is building business today. You're making some good money, but guess what? You can reinvest that your wealth asset, which is your business, right? To be so structured that it continues to give you wealth, and then create a structure that helps you maximize the returns that you're getting out of your business, such that it's not only your business that your source of wealth, but you can create multiple sources of wealth, wealth classes, asset classes that continue to give you or create wealth that multiplies what you have, continues to not just grow the wealth, but protect and preserve it. On the African continent, for instance, what you know is that people would, when they are getting to the end of their life, they would do a will, they will, you know, break up everything they have, give one to A, give another to B. What that does for you is that there is no generational flow of that wealth, because there is no incentive for the people that you have broken those wealth to pull it together and make it bigger. Everybody will take their own portion of the cake. Some will squander it. Some will sell the real estate. Some will even sell the business. And the work that a man has done, the primary wealth creator, the work he has done in his lifetime by the next generation, if there has been no structure that has been set up to continue to build on that thing, everything just crumbles. Everything gets dissipated. It's even worse in our generation where our families are scattered all over, you know, the globe. So you can have a family that has built fantastic business or businesses, chains of businesses in Nigeria that are doing well, generating wealth for the family. But guess what? The next generation is not even prepared to be a responsible owner, to understand how to nurture and take those businesses to the next level, such that they are even doing much more outside the lifetime of the person that built them, the founding generation. Do you see? Think about the Shubomis, you know. The father is gone. He was
an FCMB guy, right?
FCMB. Yeah. Yes, the Balogun's, right? See all the businesses that they built, that man built, right? Look at his children. Oh. Even some of the children have gone to build other amazing businesses. Do you see? But guess what? The guy is no longer here. His businesses are so institutionalized. There is a structure that will ensure that the second generation begins to, you know, benefit, third generation, fourth generation. Those things continue to, that's how you build a legacy. Do you see? That's how you build a legacy. That's what a family office does for you. A family office will help you to build structure around the wealth that you are creating right now. Will help you to leverage all the opportunities to grow that wealth significantly. Will prepare the beneficiaries of the wealth for them to be responsible owners of wealth and handle the obligation that carrying wealth or coming from a wealthy family, what it takes. Because some children are just not ready for that obligation of managing huge wealth that you were not a part of creating it. And so what they do is they just don't feel the need to do anything anymore. So they just squander. And then 10 years down the line, the family name is gone. All their assets gone. Nothing to write them about. No legacy. That's why a family office is instrumental to ensure that we reverse that trend and that wealth can actually perpetuate generations. As a matter of fact, I went for an event in 2019, which was my first interaction with a lot of family offices globally. At that event, I think it was just two of us that came from Africa. The rest were from Asia, Middle East, UK, US. And I interacted with families who were already in their 19th generation, 16th generation, 9th generation.
Wow.
They were representatives of a family that came for that event. It was a family office exchange event in New York.
Yeah. Wow.
So you can imagine what the level of intentionality that is required for you to be able to build a wealth, to build wealth that, you know, perpetuates several generations.
Wow. When you said 19th generation, I was like, whoa.
I was amazed myself.
Generation of wealth.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we have Woku. And what I hear you say is that the children don't even necessarily have to work in the business. Sorry, my wife just walked in. from work.
It's fine. It's fine.
Love how I'm talking to my buddy, buddy, my friend. I'll talk to you soon. I'm coming on now. Yeah. So, and the children don't have to work in the business, right?
At all. They don't
They
have
don't
to.
have to.
I mean, I remember that I granted an interview recently where I talked about that. Because the average African wants the business to remain in the family, which is not a bad thing in itself, right? But if you find yourself running a business where there is no successor or there is nobody within the family that is interested, what do you do? Do you jeopardize the future of that business by putting it in the hand of someone that is not willing and interested in running it and scaling it? Right? You may be better off selling that business, maybe selling a portion of it and bring partners on
That's right.
board that can run it and take it to the next level. But your children can continue to be beneficial owners because you still have shareholding in the
I see.
business.
This is very powerful. Charlie Munger said that
Cheers.
the will to prepare is more important than the will to win.
Oh, yes.
Because it takes a lot of work to structure this thing. It's a
It's
lot
a
of
lot of work.
mindset shift. It's a lot of
Yes.
work.
It
What I also
is.
hear you saying that the family wealth is that it's a pie that keeps on giving. But the old
Absolutely.
model, people just take their stuff and scatter everything.
Everything. Everything. And in fact, when you talk about the family wealth, there are different legs of it. It's not just the financial wealth only. There is also the family history, the family value, their traditions, their cultures, the things that made the founding
To
generation
make money in the first
really
place,
think.
yes.
Yes, the mindset they had, the vision they had, all those things need to be
I
preserved,
see.
documented for the
This
next generation.
is so. This is so powerful. I have been married now for 17 years, so I think for 16 years, every day I read Psalm 91. I have three children, and my first son is 15, second 14, last 11. And my niece told me something when my mom died. She said, "Uncle, do you know that this scripture you have been reading, Grandma used to always read it every single time. So even though she didn't
Oh,
have money to give to you, I think she passed." So that's
yes,
something
she passed
that was
value to
passed to
you.
you. That's a powerful thing. Abela, what are some of the habits of families who create wealth and keep the wealth rolling, and habits of families who just squander it, and the next generation you don't see the wealth again? Because there are a lot of them like that in Nigeria. It's very sad, but that's the truth.
Plenty. There are
It's
many like
plenty,
that.
but that's the truth.
So one of the first things that I will say about families who create wealth and the wealth passes on, meaning the wealth is sustainable, right? Is the
Oh, come on
intentionality,
now.
right? In grooming the
Come
next
on now. That's
generation.
the work, man. That's the
Absolutely.
Come on.
The
Yes,
intentionality.
sir. Yes, ma. Yes, ma. Yes, ma.
Funny enough, I met some guy in the north. They are into leather production and it's quite a big business. That business actually is in their third generation because it was started by his grandfather. The man has done the business. Now his son is in the
Taking
business,
it to the next level.
you know, taking it to the next level. And it was good to just hear their
Oh,
story,
lovely.
right? And when he talked about the intentionality of getting his son to be interested in the business, of course, he took the guy to the best school abroad. You know, he's got his master's, he's done this and that. But the boy always knew that after all he said
I'm
and
coming back
done,
home.
I'm coming back to take on this family business to the next level. And he did not just start when the guy was 21 years old. No. The guy started to work in the family business from when he was age six.
Every holiday he goes there to work.
Age six. The work can be as little as I went to carry file to give somebody. But guess what? He's been around the business so
Oh, that's
long
so beautiful.
that, you know, his mindset has been shaped. The values, the family heritage,
So
you
beautiful.
don't have to do a lot to try to psych that guy up to come and run the family business and take it to the next level. Because he sees how his father did it, taking it from their grandfather, and the business is doing fairly well, you know. And then the responsibility is now on him to also take it to the next level, right? So for me, number one habit is that intentionality. And it's in everything. It's not just in the four walls of school that you take them to. It's in the way you nurture them. It's in the values you instill in them. It's the kind of exposures that you give them, because everything is education.
Oh, this is so good.
Everything is education. So I think for me, that is one thing. The other people that you see that their wealth does not quite last is also where you have that free will. So there is no intentional investment, you know, in helping the children to have understanding of the family wealth and what the purpose of the wealth. That's another thing that I find that is missing. A lot of people don't have purpose around their wealth. They're just making money because there's money to be made. So, hey, let's just make it, right? But when the purpose of a thing is determined, it's inevitable that you will see that even the next generation will pick certain things. I will speak a little bit about the late Herbert Wigwe, whom I was fortunate to have worked with very closely, together with his partner, to build their own single family office. One of the things that they passed on very quickly that I saw with their children is philanthropy. The kids themselves were already engaged in philanthropic activities, areas that they were interested in. They already took that on, and they were doing it with their own money. The kids also have built their own businesses. Oh, yes. The one that died already had like three businesses. Apart from the fact that he was working with AFC, I was fortunate to have at least been part of all of that process. And I reviewed some of the business plans. Do you see? Even the one that is still remaining was building a very huge business even while she was still in school. She hadn't even done her NYSA at the time. And she was doing business that she could be saying she needs funding of 70 million. She wants to raise funds and stuff like that. And she had already deployed her own money to build the business to a certain level. So I'm saying this to say that it's not so much about the wealth that you're building, but also the values you're passing on to your children. I think for me, that is like the biggest thing in terms of whether your wealth is generational or not, because there is a level of responsibility that wealth creation and wealth preservation, you know, requires. And without that discipline, it's just a matter of time. The wealth is bound to dissipate.
Guys, anyway, before I go on, this episode of the Powerful Podcast was powered by Abiola. First of all, before I even talk about what it's powered by, how do people get in touch with you? I'm going to put your contact in the show notes.
Please, by all means, anybody can reach out to me on LinkedIn. That's the easiest way. Just look for Abiola Adejiron on LinkedIn. Exactly. That's the easiest way to reach me.
If you're watching this on YouTube, please click on the subscribe button. If you're listening to this on the podcast, this episode of the Powerful Podcast was powered by Sales Factory Global. Click on the link in our show notes for any of our products or services that works for you. Abiola, as we wrap up this now, what are some of the wealth habits that we all should start imbibing, no matter how small the money that we have? What are some of the wealth habits we should start imbibing now? You make money from your business. What you start doing? How do you save? How do you multiply what you got?
The number one thing I would say is pay yourself first. Remember, I said that, you know, you can create wealth through various means. The number one thing, if you're a business owner, for instance, is that your business is an asset class. But from that asset class, you can also generate other asset classes by taking, you know, money from there by way of dividend or by way of maybe salary that you earn from the business and put it in other asset classes. Pay yourself first in the sense that whatever you're getting out of the business, whatever return, and I dare say, as a business owner, you are first an investor before you are an employee, if you are an owner-managed business. So as an investor, you are entitled to returns. As an employee, you are entitled to salary. Those are the major ways you should draw out of your existing business. And then whatever it is that you draw out of your existing business, you must be able to diversify it into other investment asset classes that can multiply your wealth. That's number one. Number two is delayed gratification. You know, there's a sense in which you're making money and you just want to, you know, enjoy the money, right? But it's also good that you're able to put some of this money aside. When I say pay yourself first, I don't mean from your salary, even if you're a career person. How you pay yourself first is not the salary you earn. It is what you invest. It is what you invest. If you're earning 1 million naira and you pay yourself 100K every month, that 100K is your own. Because everything is designed to take money from you. Your rent, your school fees, food, insurance, this or that.
Your mother-in-law.
Do you see everybody, people that come to you, you know, with their own problems, and you give them charity and everything, everything is up against you to take money from you. So the wise thing to do is pay yourself first before you pay anybody else. Upfront. So put a direct debit on your account. As the money is landing, let the bank be taking it to where it's supposed to be. Then every other person can take whatever is remaining. Rent will come, school fees will come, food, this and that. All of that will come. Pay yourself first. That's the first one. The number two one is where I said delay gratification. Because sometimes when you even put the money, you know, out there, you have to lock it in a wealth-creating asset. Don't just put it in a savings account and be looking at it. That's not the best use of your money, right? If anything at all, you're probably even losing money because with inflation, you know, time value of money, you're probably losing money even with your money in the bank, right? Put it in another wealth creation asset or an income generating asset that can multiply the value of that investment. And of course, delay gratifications. Like if we can just delay gratification and enjoy the power of compounding interest.
Let me tell you, compounding interest by Charlie Munger. I said, do not disrupt anything that is compounding unnecessarily.
Don't, because that's the power of wealth creation. People that have created wealth will tell you how much they've had to deny themselves certain things so that they can come into the wealth that we now see and celebrate. Do you see? So that delayed gratification will help you to really enjoy the power of compounding interest, right? And maybe the last thing that I would say is, let there be a purpose for the wealth you're creating. Let it be beyond you, okay? Have a purpose, have something that is bigger than you for which this wealth is for. And you will see that when your purpose is larger, you see that even resources will flow in your direction that will fulfill that purpose.
Fascinating conversation. Ah! This thing blessed me. It will bless a lot of people.
I pray so.
Oh my God.
That's it.
Let me stop the recording with just a little bit before I go and meet my wife. Is already at home. Ah. Hey.
Yes, so.
Hey. Hey. Oh, now.
I did. I mean, really, you know, if you think about yourself as an institution.
Let me just press end of session.
Okay.